Blog Talk Radio.
This is power. This is tradition. This is Talladega. The biggest party at NASCAR returns October 12th through 14th.
Pack up the crew and head out to Talladega Super Speedway for race weekend October 12th through 14th. Ticket holders for the 1000bulbs.com 500 can enjoy free camping in three different campgrounds around the track. This is more than a race. This is Talladega.
This is Spencer Boyd, driver of the number 76 Grunt-style Chevy Camaro. And listen to the Pit Stop with Tim Despain.
Good evening from Tybee Island, Georgia. I'm Tim Spain. You're in the Pit Stop alongside of my good friend, the CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, right outside of Richmond Raceway, Mr. Stephen Wilson. But at this time, we've got the birthday boy, Mr. Reverend Joe. Happy birthday, brother. How you doing?
Thank you, sir. We're doing okay. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Like I said, I'm sitting here in the hotel here looking out over the Atlantic Ocean, and it's something to see, brother.
You haven't seen anything until you see the Pacific. I saw enough of the Atlantic.
Yeah, I've heard. I still want to see it. I got to fly out over it one time, but I didn't really get to walk down there to it. But I got to see it when I flew out of Vegas a few years back.
Well, you're just going to have to come and visit and fall in the ocean.
It's 10-4. Sounds good. We'll go to a racetrack.
Well, you're traveling the world for your anniversary, and happy anniversary, by the way. But I'm glad that everything's going good.
Thank you very much, Reverend Joe. Yeah, we decided to come on down through here and hang out a couple nights before we head back to Dega Nation and get back in the real world, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, well, that has to happen once in a while. We're hiding out ourselves, but we're in a secret location, so I can't tell you where we are. But we did manage to remember to call you.
10-4. I'm glad you remember.
Shall we get this party started?
Yes, sir. Crank it up, Reverend.
Oh, Lord, we come before you, and we thank you for a great weekend of racing and banging and crashing and all kinds of stuff going on, but didn't see anyone get hurt. A lot of hurt feelings, but that's normal. But we thank you so much for your protection. And we ask your protection over everyone at every racetrack, all over this great country and all over the world this week. And we also ask your protection upon our country. We ask you to please watch over our politicians and the people that are leading our country. Keep them in line, kick them in line, and help us all. Please protect all of those. And protect all those soldiers and men and women that are out there protecting us all over the world and all over our country. All those people that wear uniforms, that run toward the trouble while we're running away from it. Watch over all of them and all of us. And we thank you for sending your son to die for our sins, so that by just the speaking his name, we can enter into heaven. We thank you for that all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Jeff.
Thank you.
As always, great invitation, River, and I got to apologize. I did not get a flyover, but I can tell you probably the reason why at a later date, like you said, you couldn't know about where you're hiding out at, but I'll let you know why I couldn't get the flyover recorded. Anyway, Reverend, thank you again for coming on and doing all this, but let everybody know where they can follow you on your social media stuff and your website, brother.
Well, my website is ontrackwithjesus.org, and our email is ontrackwithjesus@AOL.com. You can reach me by phone most of the time at 951-232-7630, and we're on Facebook at Rev Joe Bubico, and I have Tim can tell you how to find me on Twitter. I can't find myself on Twitter.
at Rev Joe Bubico.
Is that how it works?
Yes, sir.
I've been able to check messages and stuff, but I haven't been able to get to all of them. I get emails that tell me you've got 10 messages or whatever, and I go there and I can find two. So who knows? Maybe it was 10 mentions, and every time the pit stop comes up, I'm mentioned. And that's good. I love it.
Good, Reverend Joe. And again, from everybody here at Speedway Digest and the Pit Stop Radio, have a happy, happy birthday, brother.
I shall, and we shall, and we will talk to you next week.
10-4, Reverend. Tell Miss Betty we said hello to.
I will do that.
See you, Reverend.
Take care.
You too, brother. Official Reverend of the show there, Mr. Reverend Joe Bubico. Let's bring on my sidekick. He's just right outside of Richmond Raceway. He and I spent a lot of time together this past weekend at Dodger Raceway. CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Stephen, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing pretty good, but yourself?
Doing good. Like I said, we got settled in down here in Tybee Island and looking out over the Atlantic, and we got a few little rain clouds and stuff. But, Stephen, before we jump into some breaking news, the number to call in is 215-383-3681. Again, I'm Tim Despain alongside of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Coming up here shortly, we have driver the number 72 Chevrolet for TriStar Motorsports in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Corridor Joy. And then later on this evening, we got owner of JD Motorsports, Gary Keller, and Mr. Johnny Davis will be joining us. So we got a jam-packed show tonight. And, Stephen, we had some breaking news about NASCAR today. I don't think you and I saw this one coming either, brother. Furniture Row Racing announced today they are going to cease operations after the 2018 season.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some rumors here floating around in the last couple of weeks or something like that Furniture Row Racing was looking to divest itself of the team, and there were some rumors that they had approached GMS Racing after the fallout of not getting the BK Racing charter and potentially making a deal with them where they would take over the assets of the team. However, I guess in the last week to 10 days or so, that pretty much all fell apart. And back in August, the team said, you know, they were still working to find replacements for Five Hour Energy, who was not on the car. So, yeah, I mean, them coming out today and saying that, you know, they're closing up is, I mean, the sport's in a bad position when something like this happens. When you have a reigning champion, the team of the reigning champion that just last year not only just won the championship but with Martin Truex Jr., but put up their most impressive numbers to date while they were running a second car for Eric Jones, who won the Rookie of the Year championship, outside of one win by Regan Smith in the Southern 500 in 2011. You know, Martin Truex Jr. has won the rest of the races, the championship, led somewhere around 6,000 laps or so for them. And for them to close up, I mean, it's bad for the sport. I made a comment earlier today that that'd be like the Patriots winning the Super Bowl. And the very next year, as the season's coming to a close, Yep, so we're going to close this thing up at the end of the year. We're going to shut down football team, meaning there's some kind of problem somewhere, and we've got to make some changes somehow. First and foremost, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think these charters are a very, very bad deal. Since the charters were implemented just a handful of years ago, about 40% of the teams that had a charter or were given a charter during that initial year are either no longer racing and they've closed up shop or they've downsized. Nobody has made out any better with the charters than Rob Kaufman. He's the only one in this deal that seems to have made any money. And maybe a handful of people that are around the sport as far as people that have sold off their charters to pay off debts or, you know, to restructure or lease. But in all honesty, something has to change. I think the charters need to go away, to be honest with you. NASCAR needs to restructure what we're doing. We need to start running shorter races. There's just no two ways about it. We've got to cut costs somewhere. We can only cut costs, but so much on travel, on engines, on chassis, testing, you know, all the things that NASCAR has tried to rein in costs on. We need to start running shorter races. We need to do this for the fans. We need to do this for the sport. We need to do this for television ratings. We need to find ways to cut this season down some way, somehow. 38 races a year. We're the longest sport that runs. And it's a fairly cost-prohibitive sport for new people to come in. The barrier of entry today, it takes a small fortune. And if you just don't have that, you don't have that backing, then unfortunately you're going to end up like another BK, like another Furniture Row Racing, like any numerous other teams that, you know, about 40% or so that no longer either have a charter or a downsize since it was implemented. NASCAR's got to rein this thing in. They got to figure a way to do it. And I think the only way to do it is that we're going to have to cut costs, and we're going to have to cut costs in areas that people aren't particularly inclined to do so. And I think that means either cutting some of the events out per year or cutting down these events in length. We need to start looking at engine leasing programs. We need to start looking at the number of cars that a team can be certified per year. You know, I think there needs to be a real wholesale look when a racing champion in this sport and a magnitude such as this can win a championship, is one of the big three this year that has won multiple events and looks to be a favorite going in the homestead yet again for a second championship in a row, is going to close down.
I will agree on every aspect that you just brought up, Stephen. Yes, when this charter stuff come out, I didn't agree with it either. I didn't agree and I didn't disagree. I was sort of straddling the fence, wanting to give Rob Kaufman a chance to see how everything was going to work out. But like you mentioned, Rob's the only one that's made any money out of this deal. And, you know, like Ron Devine, you know, he had the charter. But just exactly how much, I think we spoke this past weekend at Darlington, exactly how much do you go out there and figure how much a charter is? Is it per A team, B team, or C team? Because, you know, some of your A's and B's, they're not going to get rid of the charter. Your C-class teams, that's where the charter is going to come from if it gets sold or leased. But how do we go about putting a price tag on a charter?
You know, I've actually been asked that question one time before. And, again, I'm not sure if it was you or who asked me this, but, you know, somebody asked me that, you know, what do they think of, you know, what do they think a charter is worth? Well, my opinion is that the charter is only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. And, you know, if you can lease a charter for, you know, $100,000 or $250,000, but to buy a charter is $2 million, $2.8 million, whatever the color, whatever it was that the BK Racing charter was sold for, it's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. And that's the sad fact of it, is that there's now more charters today available than there were a year ago, and especially 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly, Stephen. And I think we've got our first guest coming up here. He can probably talk and let us know a lot more about this charter stuff and everything. We've got driver of the number 72 Chevrolet for TriStar Motorsports joining us right now, Mr. Corey LaJoy. Let's bring Corey in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson. Corey, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing good. We were just discussing the deal that went on with Furniture Row Racing. I know you probably don't really want to talk about that, Corey, but and this charter stuff. Stephen and I were just talking about how do you put a price tag on a charter? Do you have any idea?
Well, just like everything else, it's supply and demand, right? Right now we got more supply than we really have demand from owners really wanting to get in the sport, because we got guys wanting to bail and get out quicker than they want to get in because it costs so damn much.
You got that right. Yeah, Stephen was just talking about, you know, we was given this charter deal a halfway look at it when Rob Coffin brought all this stuff to him. And just like Stephen mentioned, Stephen said Rob's the only one that's really made any money out of this deal. But anyway, enough on that, Corey. I just want to get your take on that. Talk about your big weekend here at Darlington Raceway, brother. You done a throwback of your dad's. That was pretty neat. I forgot to get a couple pictures of the car.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool scheme we got to run this weekend there at Darlington. It was, you know, that's a pretty iconic scheme, even from the old Busch Series days, but it had a lot of meaning to me, obviously, too, because I was a little kid, and I remember going to the racetrack pretty much for the first time, watching Dad in victory lane with that thing.
That was pretty neat, seeing you drive at number 72 around there. And, Corey, since they've repaid Darlington, you've run a few races on it, like you said, and it's sort of getting back to the old Darlington. Am I right? Sort of getting that wear and tear, and you're getting all that stuff
it's getting really bumpy. I mean, naturally, it's wore out just from the asphalt that they use down there. It's got all those seashells in it. So, you know, after about 20 laps, you're screaming for tires, but, you know, your crew chief's telling you, you know, you got to stay out there for another 30 to 40 more laps. So at the end of that run, you're hanging on to that thing. And, you know, that's one of my favorite tracks because, you know, the fall off is so great, and you really have to be up on the wheel and keep your elbows up all night.
And Corey, if you can, sort of let some of our listeners know what you're talking about, tire fall off. And after about the first lap, you start getting the tires start wearing pretty good. And how hard is it to drive that car after them tires get wore like that, especially there at the Bojangles Southern 500 there in Darlington?
Yeah, so it's you know, you got so much grip the first 5 to 7 laps on them stickers that you're pretty much running some qualifying laps there in the beginning, and then, you know, then you start have to modulate the throttle, and you just have to start backing the corner way up just because those tires don't grip as good as they were when they were new. So for the last half of the run, you're just doing all you can to move around on the track to find where there's the least amount of rubber buildup to so that Goodyear Eagles can stick as good as possible. But you lose forward drive, you lose lateral grip, you lose turn. So it's a handful, but that's what makes it fun.
And Corey, I'm pretty sure you and your crew chief and team, y'all were probably set up to start a little bit earlier. You know, we had that little over 1 hour weather delay with the lightning in the area. Did you have your car set up for some of the sunshine and then going into the darkness of the night, or did you have it set up for darkness?
Well, you just get the balance as good as you can and just look back at the notes and see what the track does. Usually, contrary to what a lot of people might think, that, you know, once the sun goes down, you'll get loose because the track will gain grip and the front tires will start turning better and the back usually can't keep up. So, you definitely have to plan. You have to work some adjustability into your car. So whether that's, you know, hanging spring rubbers in the back to jam in the left rear spring over the course of the race, and you got to make sure that you're on the tighter end when you end practice. That way it'll trend towards, you know, what's best going to suit your car.
Corey, my final question before I hand you over to Steven. It was a hot one up here, brother. It was hot in Dalton, South Carolina. And from what I understand, drivers, y'all probably lose 5 to 10 pounds, sometimes even more than that, as far as the heat. Can you let everybody know exactly what you did prior to hydrate yourself before that big, long race here at Darlington Raceway?
Say that again.
Talking about hydration, Corey, with that long race like it was and it being so hot, can you let everybody know exactly what you did prior to the race to sort of hydrate yourself for that long race?
Yeah,
that's a
you've got to be ahead on your drinking throughout the week, you know, and be conscious of that. But I've been taking some salt tablets that put the potassium and magnesium and stuff back in your body that just plain water can't do. And, you know, and Gatorade is not what the Gatorade used to be back in the day. Now it's a little bit watered down and it's got a bunch of sugar in it. So the salt tablets help quite a bit from cramping up and all that. So at the end of that race on Sunday night, man, I was pretty spent. And that black suit of mine was white from all the salt and all the sweat that that thing was holding on to. So, man, that's a long 500 miles at that place for sure. So I was glad to make it the whole way.
I bet it was, brother. And again, thank you very much for taking time out, calling in. I'm behind you over Steven Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, and good luck on the rest of the season, brother. And we look forward to having you back on the show.
I appreciate that.
Of course, thanks, Lane. I appreciate you coming on tonight.
No,
the Southern 500 really didn't have a whole lot of caution periods out there. It was, for the most part, it was a pretty tame race aside from the Clint Boyer accident, you know, just about a third of the way through the event. In events like this, especially a really, really hard event like the Southern 500 where you're racing around there, how much does that change your strategy? We've seen events there that have been fairly chaotic and this one being fairly tame. So how much does that change the strategy throughout your night?
Well, sometimes you have to be in the same strategy that the guys you're racing around are on, but those fast guys, if there's a those 100 lap segments, those guys usually break it up with two stops where it's been more beneficial for a team like ours to just try to do it at one and stretch it as far as possible, just to save that minute of time, over the course of the run. So you got to be on your toes when it comes to strategy, depending on, you know, if the race is trending to go towards all green like that. You have to kind of make your bed and lay in it and hope the cautions come out when you need them or they don't come out when you don't need them. So, man, but even that last stage there when it was going green for, you know, 75 to 100 laps there, man, I'm sure I can speak for a lot of the other guys, man. That's your heart rate's up and you're hanging on those old tires and you're slipping, sliding around. You're frustrated because you're not running as good as you think you'd like to be or, you know, whatever the case may be. And, you know, right there before Clint Boyer, monster truck Ryan Newman, I was sucking wind pretty good.
NASCAR brought some different coated tires there, I believe, on the left side. How much was that a different, you think, in the factor of the overall racing? We saw some really good racing around the racetrack, and the fans seemed to like it, the people on TV, the fans in the stands. A lot of drivers seemed to like the event and the overall outcome of the event, but, you know, tires sometimes can make or break events, and we've all heard all kinds of different opinions on, you know, what kind of tires should be running events, but what do you think them bringing different coated tires there and how did that affect the race?
So I feel like the tires they brought were pretty decent to where the top didn't wasn't the dominant groove. There was you could run the bottom in 3 and 4 and still be competitive. And you didn't really see a lot of guys on the fence that were making a bunch of hay where the 42 was running his best, was kind of in the middle and making a big diamond. So it gave you a lot of options to going all the way in the flat, and it rubbered up pretty nice in 1 and 2, so you had to move around and find grip. So whenever it does that, it usually makes for a pretty good race.
you're splitting the ride with Cole Whip this year, so you know you guys are on a little bit of different strategy than you know other teams that are running the whole year with a single driver. How much of that, does that help you knowing that you don't have to go to all 36 points paying events and the two non-points paying events throughout the year?
Well, I mean, obviously my goal as a racer driver is to be in the car every week just so I can you know, put my team in the best point position possible. But on the flip side of that is it is nice having an off weekend here and there. So there's pros and cons of both sides, but that's just the situation I'm in now, and I'm trying to make the best of it.
TriStar Motorsports this year, they got a charter lease from Front Row. Front Row just got another charter from BK Racing. Do you think that you guys will be in the same, will be in a similar type of situation in 2019? Or as you said at the beginning of the show, there's more supply than demand, and you know everybody over at TriStar Motorsports may try and capitalize that while you know there's more supply than demand at this point.
I don't know. It's for as much as it costs to be competitive and to win races nowadays, I don't see anybody jumping in with both feet right now, unfortunately. So right now, you know, the TriStars of the world that are kind of flying under the radar and getting by and doing things pretty light, I feel like those guys are going to come out, you know, eventually once, you know, if the sport gets sold and some of the TV money is attributed to the teams a little bit more, you know, we might be able to close that gap from the haves from the have-nots. So we'll see. But spending $40 million a car is obviously not the correct business model because it ran a billionaire out of business pretty quick. It's ran a bunch of billionaires out of business. So we got to figure out how to rein that back in.
Any suggestions on what you think?
That's way above my pay grade, but I'm sure we can sit here and talk about that all night. But, you know, the thing is, if you can look at salary caps and you can look at a lot of things, but the guys who have the most money to spend are always going to beat the guys who don't spend as much money. It's just the way racing's always been. But I think that there's still too many areas that the teams that have engineering that are concentrating on certain things all day long, they still have a lot of gray area they can work in. So I don't know. It's there's lots of things that, you know, all the way down to, you know, having maybe 30 races a year as opposed to 36. But then you get to talking into track leases and all that sort of stuff. So there's some way smarter people at NASCAR than myself, so I'm sure they saw that news today and they're a little bit worried about it, which they should be, like we all are.
Corey, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here, but before we let you go, as always, thank your sponsors and anybody that helped you out this past weekend and those that are helping you out get through the rest of the year out there. Thanks again, and good luck throughout the rest of the 2018 season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's, we got a couple of pretty good sponsors on our car this year with Schluter Systems, and we got a couple of good sponsors towards the end of the year. We're going to have, I can't say because it's not announced yet, but there's be a cool sponsor on for Texas that everybody's going to know. And we're, you know, we're just trying to put a bunch of races together. We have a bunch of cryptocurrency sponsors been on. Everybody that's had a hand helping us out this year, we appreciate it, and hopefully we can get everybody rounded up next year so we can make some improvements and, you know, run a little better.
Thanks a lot. You take care.
Thanks.
Thanks, Cora.
Yeah, man.
Cora LaJoy there, driver the number 72 car there for TriStar Motorsports in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. See, we got our other guests waiting. Man, we got them loaded in tonight. We got owner of JD Motorsports with Gary Carey, Mr. Johnny Davis. Let's bring Johnny Davis in with a bang at the pit stop with Timmy Spain and Steven Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Y'all ready for this?
Good evening, Mr. Johnny Davis. How you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good, man. With that introduction there, I didn't know if I need to get my boxing gloves out if we was going to fight or talk about racing.
JD, I'm too old to fight. Just like I told Scott Revis. Scott Revis, we brought him on. We've had him on 2 or 3 times. Brought him on with that first thing he said. He said he was too old to fight. And I said, we wasn't planning on fighting, Scott.
Yeah, well, I'm too old to fight, too, but I ain't going to turn my back and run if somebody goes to punching at me. But it'll be fine. So what's going on tonight, guys?
Well, I was going to let Stephen Wilson have you first. Johnny, we just got rid of Corey LaJoy. You know, we just had him on there. And we've been talking sponsorship deal, you know, like the deal with Frontier Road Racing. They're talking about closing down and everything. But I'm going to let Stephen have you first, and then he'll throw you back over to me, and I got a few questions before we let you jump out of here.
All right, sir.
Johnny, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on. You get a lot of people an opportunity in this sport. Many of them have thanked you throughout their career. Some of them you've even given second and third shots at getting back into the sport. How does a team like you go out there and find the guys that are, you know, looking for that opportunity, but obviously not the opportunity? They don't have the opportunity to go and buy that seat from Joe Gibbs Racing or somebody of that caliber.
Well, it's got Spire Sports Marketing. We deal with them a lot, David Erickson and those guys over there. They bring us a lot of people that's trying to get into sport. They know we work very well with small budgets and get the biggest bang out of the buck there. And then sometimes just different drivers will call us and their family, they got a little family money and they want to give it a shot and see if the kid can do it. And we generally work something out and give it a good shot.
NASCAR is obviously a very competitive sport, and you guys have, you know, for a team like you and JDA Motorsports, you're able to keep up sometimes with some of these teams out there. What are you guys doing different that maybe some of these teams out there should start taking notice to you guys more often than not? And just an example of that is Ross Chastain has had some really good runs for you. Lanny Castle had a really good run for you in the Southern 500. And Ross Chastain was out there leading a majority of the Xfinity Series race. So the caliber of drivers that are there are showing some very impressive speed. So what should these other teams actually be out there looking for at you guys?
Well, unfortunately, we're in a money-driven business. As I heard just talking to Corey a while ago, it just costs so much to do this. We excel in getting a dollar to go further, and I work harder at chasing down the best deal out there and forming the best relationships with the other teams and getting some support from them and earning their trust. We have a good relationship with the boys at Ganassi. They've sold us some cars. They bought all those Turner cars from Turner Scott and opened their program with that. And we were able to, they passed those cars to us and they were better cars. I got a good relationship with Richie Gilmore and Dysinger at RCR Engines. They do a lot of engines for us. And the Clements has always done us a good job over there, Tony and Glenn. And Pro Motors does engines. We kind of had to scatter out a little bit there, and you know, we got good relationships. We tell people whatever we're going to do, and we do what we say, and that creates a good family atmosphere to where they trust us and put the right pieces out there for us to help us run better. And you can't never put a disclaimer on the fact that Ross Chastain's been there for 4 years now, and you know, any time you work with somebody that long, you learn how to gain the most out of each other, and we both feed off each other, the team he's with, the four team, the crew chief and the employees, they all feed off each other, and they've become kind of like family. So to do it in 1 year, it's hard to do, and second year gets better, the third year gets better, and the fourth year gets even easier. But we're to the point now without finding, you know, a couple more million a year to spend on the race team, then we can't really move the needle from where we're at.
About 4 years ago, your son passed away, and he was somebody that was very integral to JD Motorsports and to people in the garage, the people there at the shop. How has that affected the sport and affected your team to some degree? Knowing that somebody like that had such a profound impact on people all around the sport.
Well, the NASCAR family is huge, and we all pull together in those times of losing a loved one, a family member, and extend a helping hand out in many ways. And it's just what we do. We'll fight you and race you hard and wreck you tomorrow, but if something happens, we'll be there to support you and help you. And that's just the camaraderie in our sport that we've created amongst ourselves that does that.
Where do you think you see the Xfinity Series going in the next couple of years? There's been a lot of talk of the Kyle Busches and the Brad Keselowskis of the sport continuing to come down and race in the series. Some say it's a great thing that they come down and give drivers an opportunity to race against people that they may eventually race against in the Cup Series, but then there's the other side of the fence where it's people feel that they come down, and when they come down, it's the show's all about them, and it's not about the people trying to make a name for themselves as a series is really defined as. What do you think about that, and where do you think that NASCAR could be going within the next couple of years, even after limiting some of these drivers?
Well, it isn't the drivers. Ross proved it's not driver this weekend. I mean, he sat on the pole, he led laps, he won both stages in a car that's connected to the Cup 100%. But an Xfinity team that comes out of a Cup operation has way more engineering, way more technology handed down for free than we could ever even think about buying or getting. So it's not the driver, it's the team that we're racing every week that hurts. Ryan Preece wasn't racing in Gibbs cars. Ross had a shot to win the race this weekend. He was as fast as anybody there. So it's not the drivers. He outrun the good drivers. It's the team, it's the technology, it's all the engineering that we can't get our hands on that makes it hard. We can outrun them if we had an equal playing field, but unfortunately there's no way to create an equal playing field the way the guidelines are for the two series. They're so close together, too much information translate over that we can't get. So I don't mind racing those drivers. We can beat those drivers if we had equal cars. You get one of those Brad Keselowski to drive somebody else's Ford that's a team like mine, you know, so he stays in his make and put them in his car, then they'll shine. It's the cars that ain't the drivers. They're good. They got talent, but there's a lot of talent in the back of the field, too. They just don't have money.
Jenny, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight. I'm going to throw you back over to Tim. Good luck in the rest of the 2018 season.
Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Stephen. JD, just to sort of touch on you and Stephen, we're talking about money. It's a money-driven sport. It's a business, and you and your team, y'all do a great job. Since NASCAR has bought ARCA, and you know ARCA has implemented the Elmore engine, and they're also running the Elmore engine in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. Do you think that is the way NASCAR might need to go to sort of help you and your team save on expenses, and then talk about what you just mentioned, the level playing field with that Elmore engine? Like Bill Kimmel's always told me, he can run that thing 3 or 4 times before he had to send it off and have it redone.
Yeah, that might have been a saving grace to ARCA and the Cup Series, but it would put teams like myself out of business in our series. We own our own engines already, and our engine bill is already, you know, to the rate of the engine bill from running that engine. So let's take our own 20 engines. So for you to take and change the rule where we got to run that engine, then I got to throw 20 $60,000 engines away because it no longer has a value. So then I got to go buy some more engines at $50,000 or $60,000. I don't have that money. So that would be the death of a lot of teams in our garage to do that.
I understand, JD. I did not realize. Yeah, because with all that y'all got grandfathered in, yeah, that would be the death of a lot of teams. But JD, talk about expenses like me, like you and Stephen were discussing earlier, and we were talking to Corey, and Corey mentioned maybe dropping some of these races back in the Cup Series, also the Xfinity Series, because I mean it's a very long season, just like Stephen said, and it takes a lot out of the team, the hauler drivers. I mean, there's so much going on. But where do you think NASCAR can cut? Do they need to cut some races, JD, or do we need to cut back on some of the time of the races and not being so long? Just like you said earlier, I don't know what the fix is, JD, but what would you do if you was in a position in NASCAR to try to fix the situation now that we have with sponsors and not saying that at Darlington that it wasn't sold out, but like Stephen said, it was right there. It was probably 1,800 shy of being sold out, one of the biggest races ever, the Bojangles Southern 500. But what do we need to look at, JD? Well, from your business perspective side of it.
Well, if the races was 200 miles instead of 300, see, Darlington was 200 miles and it was a good race. Our Charlotte race will be 300 miles. Our Kentucky's is 300, Vegas and all those. I think 200 miles would help some, but that's not enough to really make a big difference. I think what they got to do is some spec engine parts to where we're all getting 100% the same engines and take a little horsepower out of the things where we could run them a few more races. And they're trying to do those things. They're working hard at it. I think we could do some more with the car to where the cars weren't that different from everyone else, where they didn't have the aero stuff. They've got the outside and the body of the car pretty controlled, but now they're spending so much money and time on the cup cars on the underneath. So when a cup team finds something and you got a team like a Childers or a Gibbs or Ganassi or all those guys, they build one for their Xfinity team as well. And that's the technology that we need to get cut out, bleeding down from the cup to us. If we had it to where, like back when I got started in the 80s, you could go to Hickory and race a car that you raced at Charlotte and got all the local people back involved again, the local engine shops and all that, then it would help the sport grow again on the Xfinity side. But then it might take away from the cup side. It's a tough balance that NASCAR's fighting with to figure out where the real line needs to be drawn on what they do to help everything grow. And they got a bunch of good people there. They're trying to do it right.
Yes, sir. And, JD, my final question, if I can ask you this, sort of let some of our listeners know you're a multi-car team, but just sort of let everybody know just how much work goes into getting one team to a track prior to a race, after a race. I mean, can you just let everybody know how much work goes into that, getting that car to that place, and especially if it's across on the West Coast, it's a lot more.
Well, we will try and have Vegas and IndyCar ready tomorrow and in the hauler tomorrow night, and they'll drive to Indy. And if we don't tear nothing up in Indy, the haulers for our team will leave Indy and go straight to Vegas. And we'll have two drivers in there to get the truck back home to get ready to go to Richmond with a different car that we got in the shop. And my guys are there working right now. They'll work 9, 10 o'clock Monday through Wednesday to try and make this happen. And the road course stuff got us behind. We worked all night, 24 hours one night there, and I got a good group of guys that are dedicated to the sport. They have a passion for the sport like we do, so it's not an option not to get them cars ready and not go. They love it just like I do.
And, J.D., before we let you jump out of here, like we always do everyone, we let everybody thank their sponsors, thank anyone that has helped you along the way, or anybody that you want to thank. J.D., you got the floor, buddy.
Well, we always have to thank Flex Seal, Phil Swift and his family, and keep them in your prayers and thoughts as Phil's mother is struggling with some problems right down in the hospital. We got the Watermelon, Florida Watermelon Association, Melon One. They've been a great supporter of ours since Ross came on board. Of course, that's his family. And they've allowed us to put packages together with putting stickers on watermelons for the Delaware Highway Safety, New York, and you know, different state venues that they have there. And we just got so many, man. You caught me off guard on that. I really wasn't ready, but Fame, Garrett's Bar, they've been good. Kentucky Fame to help him. JAS Trucking out of Michigan's been good for Vinnie Miller. It's just been a great ride this year. You know, Vinnie Miller's family's invested some of their personal money trying to help Vinnie grow in the business. So it's just been great. And I've overlooked a lot, but I wasn't really prepared for that question.
That's my bad, JD. I'm sorry about that. But, yeah, I just didn't want you to stay over your time that you said you would. But anyway, Johnny, thank you very much for coming on. We really do appreciate it. And don't be a stranger. We'd like to get you back on. And, again, good luck in the rest of the season. We appreciate everything that you do for NASCAR, buddy.
All right. Thank you. And y'all have a good evening out there. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. You too, JD. Johnny Davis there, Stephen. A lot of information right there in that fellow's brain, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out of him. He's been around the sport for a pretty long time and give a lot of people opportunities out there and sometimes even that second, third opportunity in the sport.
Yeah, and I wish I didn't want to keep him over his allotted time, but we could talk to everybody all night. You know, he came in there right after Corey. We had Corey and we went right into Jed. And, you know, Corey mentioned, I think Corey's on the same page you are, Stephen, about that charter stuff. He said, I'm just going to quote Corey. He said, it's too damn expensive.
Yeah, I think that's why we're having the problem that we're in right now. This unfortunately was pretty poorly implemented. Maybe a few team owners were on board with this, but I know a lot of some team owners backed away and wouldn't pay the fees, and there was some of that going on at the beginning, and then there's been others that like to try certain motorsports that, you know, I think he's right that, you know, there's no sense in them going and spending $2-3 million on a charter, because who knows honestly how long it's going to last for one, and two, there's more supply than demand, and that $2-3 million for one charter today, maybe $1 million tomorrow.
That's right. And, you know, Stephen, I posed the question to Corey there about how he hydrated himself prior and after, and he said he actually starts first of the week, just starts drinking water, Gatorade, anything he can drink, because like you said, you and I both said, some drivers lose 7, 8, 10 pounds. Some drivers even lose 12 pounds. And that 367 laps there at Dawn's Raceway for the Bojangles Southern 500, that's a long time, brother. And you know how hot it was, because you and I, we were there. I actually saw a water buffalo evaporate, Stephen. It was hot.
Yeah, it was very hot out there. It was 94, 97 degrees, something like that. At race time, dropped down to about 70s or so by the end of the night. So being in those hot 140-degree race cars, you use a lot. And we've heard of, Pocono, Indy, various different other places during the summertime where these drivers are losing, 8, 10, 12 pounds on a given race or given weekend out there. And it's a lot to absorb going into the next race weekend.
And, Stephen, we were talking before we had Corey and all this come on air. We sort of got sidetracked, but didn't, wanted to bring them on. this opens up a new can of worms. Where does Martin Truex go? You've got him now. It's finally come out. Barney Visser and Furniture Row Racing, they're closing doors. Well, pow, gone. All right, you got Kurt Busch. He still hadn't signed his contract with Stuart Haas Racing. All right, rumor is he might go to the one car at Chip Ganassi Racing. Okay, if that happens, I'm just throwing scenarios out, Stephen and listeners, where does Martin Truex Jr. fit in this scenario? Or could Martin Truex go, I don't know if it's going to be a Toyota ride open, Stephen. He's probably going to have to change manufacturers if he goes that route. Silly season has been going on, but what do you think we're looking at with these scenarios? And if you have some more scenarios, throw them out there, brother.
I don't know. At this point, I think there's a lot in flux as to where they're going to go. Toyota's going to definitely try and keep him and Cole Pern together. I think they are going to have to pony up some cash on their end to make this happen. You know, as far as where he goes at, you know, that's just another Toyota seat down. That's a Toyota seat that, you know, Christopher Bell said earlier this year that, you know, he wants to make it to the Cup Series, you know, sooner rather than later. And Toyota's going to have to find a place for him at the same time. There's more people than there are seats, unfortunately. Is that a good thing sometimes in sport? Yes. Unfortunately, it's a bad thing, too, because, we're losing out on some talent that could potentially be in sport at the same time. So every time these teams decrease like this, that's potential for the next talent to come up, move up, and make a name for themselves in the sport and find a career in the Cup Series. When a past champion, you know, especially at the caliber he is today with Cole Pern, some of these talent that may be the next generation of drivers or the next 15 years worth of drivers, they're going to be pushed aside to some degree into this. They're going to, they're going to have to find a place for him if Toyota wants to keep him. I think they'll find a place for him. Where that is, who knows? But if not, I mean, there's a lot of other seats that are coming up. You're right. The number one is a possibility, but, then what happens to Jamie McMurray at that point? I don't think he's ready to get out of the car. So he'll be looking for a seat. You've got Levon Van Der Race and the number 95. Casey Kane also mentioned that he's done at the end of this year. There's one possible seat, but they're going to have to make a conversion over to Toyota if that's going to happen. If GMS Racing is going to come to the Cup Series, they're most likely going to come to the Cup Series as a Chevrolet manufacturer. They've been a Chevrolet manufacturer since they came to the Truck Series, four years ago, something like that. They bought the Chevrolet into Xfinity Series 2, and if they're going to go to a Cup Series, I can foresee them being in a Chevrolet. They've had a lot of good luck with them as it is already, so I don't think that they're going to be making any changes. If they were going to make changes, maybe Furniture Row Racing was going to sell out to them, and they were going to bring Chevrolet, put another Chevrolet driver in. I mean, Martin Truex Jr. to go back to Chevrolet wouldn't be unusual at all. He raced Chevrolets in the Busch Series many, many years ago. So for him to go back to Chevrolet, I think Chevrolet would be lucky to have him, to be honest with you. And if he can find a place over there, I can foresee that Chevrolet may be putting out some money of their own to try and capture him as a driver.
And let me throw this scenario at you, bro. Elliott Sadler, stepping out of that junior motorsports car in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. He said he's done. Kerry Tharp presented him with a plaque. We saw it here at Darlington. Take this scenario. I don't want to rain on Johnny Davis's parade, but you got Ross Chastain, Chevrolet. Dale Earnhardt Jr. has used Ross Chastain. Ross Chastain has raced for Dale Earnhardt Jr. back in the day in the Xfinity Series. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know. What's your take?
I think that Ross Chastain does have an opportunity to move up after what he did this past weekend at Darlington. I know there's some controversy where you know, Kevin Harvick said it, that he would never get any more opportunities racing people like that. But at the end of the day, Ross Chastain outran Kevin Harvick for two-thirds of a race. So who's going to get the opportunity now? It'll probably be Ross Chastain that's going to get an opportunity, considering that he did everything that he could in his power and was doing everything he could to keep out and stay out in front of that race. And had it not been for that accident, he was going to Victory Lane Saturday afternoon at Darlington Raceway. He's going to be in that number 42 car a couple more times this year. I would say that for them, they might bode well to put him in that car on a more long-term deal, or work a deal with somebody like Junior Motorsports to put him over there. I think he has an immense amount of talent. I think he's running equipment at, you know, 200% of what it should be running. And I show, and everything that he did on Saturday out there, I think, is an opportunity for him in the Xfinity Series coming up. And, you know, there's drivers that are, you know, looking for their next step. And I think Ross Chastain has the opportunity to do so, maybe in that 42 car, maybe in that number one car, maybe in another car. But honestly, I think he's got opportunities coming up himself. So there's a lot of shifting that could happen around in the next 3 to 4 months. And by the time we get to the end of this year and get back to Daytona next February.
I definitely agree, Stephen. Just like Johnny Davis said, he said, it does take a good driver. But he did mention, you put a driver in good equipment and some A-class stuff, or, you know, above the B-class stuff, he wasn't really cutting himself down. He was just saying the equipment was better. Like he mentioned, the Cup teams have the money with the Xfinity Series affiliated teams. They can run the same deal, or not the same deal as far as the Cup side, but they can bring that down to the Xfinity side. So where Johnny Davis said he, you know, he don't have access to all that. He can't afford it. But he said good equipment makes a big deal. And I really think, just like you just mentioned it, Kevin Harvick, if he would not have got into it with Ross Chastain, Ross Chastain would have won that race. And I'm going to tell you, if Chip Ganassi Racing does not get a clamp on Ross Chastain, just like you said, Kelly Earnhardt, Junior Motorsports, so they're going to grab that young man up because he's got a sponsor going with him too. They're going to put him in that one car when Elliott Sadler steps out this year for next year in 2019. But
yeah, I think they'll have to put something together. Honestly, I think it's, you know, the right move at this point. Darlington is such a hard race track to run. Kevin Harvick has won there before. Danny Hamlin has won there before. He kept Cup drivers behind him all day long. He was the class of the field up until that incident. I think that they're going to evaluate him over the next couple of events, that they're going to put him in this number 42 car. If he can do things like he did this past weekend at Darlington, come 2019, you're going to see him in a whole brand new race car, no doubt.
Amen, brother. And Stephen, before we get out of here, I'm going to put you on the spot because I've been fighting this computer and I don't have a printer, so I don't have the weekend schedule this weekend. Do you have it, brother?
Yeah, so this weekend in Indianapolis, we're going there, cut off the regular season. Top 14 drivers are all locked in. Jimmy Johnson, Alex Bowman can get in via help with a driver winning. One of the 14 drivers that are already locked in will secure both of their positions in. Kyle Busch is going to win the regular season championship. So long as he's 22 points ahead of Kevin Harvick in the second place. You know, there's a handful of drivers or so that have an opportunity to get in the playoffs. Stenhouse, Newman, Menard, Suarez, McMurray, Byron, and I suppose half dozen or more, but they've got to win. It's going to take some to hopefully maybe get one of them in Victory Lane this weekend. I think the field is pretty much set as far as I was concerned. Anyways, onwards to what's going on this weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. NASCAR Xfinity Series qualifying Saturday morning, 11:45 a.m. with the NASCAR Xfinity Series Xfinity Series Racing, sorry, at 3 o'clock. 100 laps, 250 miles for them. And to be following that, the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series qualifying, it is an impound race, 6:15 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series racing from Indianapolis, 160 miles, 400 laps, but Brickyard 400 there. Hopefully we'll see a good race, but, you know, we'll see whether the packages work well enough to bunch these cars back up. I'm hoping they do. I hope we see a good race out there this weekend.
I'm pretty sure we will, Steven. And before we let you jump out of here, I want to thank you again. We had a blast at Darlington Raceway. We want to thank Kerry Tharp and his whole entire staff there for treating us just like we were part of the family there, covering it from the media side. And Steven, I want to thank Corey LaJoy for taking time out to come on the show tonight. I really do appreciate that. Driving number 72 Chevrolet there and in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. And I want to thank Johnny Davis, owner of JD Motorsports, for taking time out to come on also. We had some great conversations. We could have kept them all night long. But, Steven, before we jump out of here, let everybody know if they can follow you on social media and your website, my friend.
You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and SpeedwayDigest.com. I've got Tom Marquise, who is a radio and sports commentator out of Indianapolis. Excuse me. He's covered the last several Indianapolis 500s for us. He'll be at the track covering all the action for us this weekend.
That sounds good, brother. And I know you're right outside of Richmond Raceway. You're going to sign off, but I'm Tim Despain. I'm going to sign off live from Tybee Island, Georgia. We'll be back in Dagan next week. And everybody tune in and everybody watch the race this weekend. It's going to be a great race going into the chase. And, Stephen, thanks again, brother. And until next Tuesday night, we'll see you from Dagan Nation. See ya.
Here we go. Come with me. There's a world out there that we should see. Take my hand. Close your eyes. With you right here, I'm a rocketeer. Let's your name on it, above the clouds in the atmosphere, just say the words and we out of here, hold my hand if you're feeling scared, we're flying up, up, out of here.
Here we go. Come with me. Here we go, go.